Interlude 1 from Red Aces, Black Years by Elizabeth H. Crofton, New Republic, May 1977. From the moment in 1950 when he declared in his famous Wheeling, West Virginia speech that I have here in my hand a list of 57 wild cards known to be living and working secretly in the United States today, there was little doubt that Senator Joseph R. McCarthy had replaced the faceless members of HUAC as the leader of the anti-wildcard hysteria that swept across the nation in the early 50s. Certainly, HUAC could claim credit for discrediting and destroying Archibald Holmes's Exotics for Democracy, the four aces of the halcyon post-war years, and the most visible living symbols of the havoc the wildcard virus had wrought upon the nation. To be sure, there were 10 jokers for every ace, but like blacks, homosexuals, and freaks, the jokers were invisible men throughout this period, steadfastly ignored by a society that would have preferred they not exist. When the four aces fell, many felt the circus had ended. They were wrong. It was just beginning, and Joe McCarthy was its ringmaster. The hunt for red aces that McCarthy instigated and fronted produced no single spectacular victory to rival HUAC's, but ultimately McCarthy's work affected many more people and proved lasting where HUAC's triumph had been ephemeral. The Senate Committee on Ace Resources and Endeavors, SCARE, was birthed in 1952 as the forum for McCarthy's ace hunts, but ultimately became a permanent part of the Senate's committee structure. In time, SCARE, like HUAC, would become a mere ghost of its former self. And decades later, under the chairmanship of men like Hubert Humphrey, Joseph Montoya, and Greg Hartman, it would evolve into an entirely different sort of legislative animal. But McCarthy's SCARE was everything its acronym implied. Between 1952 and 1956, more than 200 men and women were served with subpoenas by SCARE, often on no more substantial grounds than reports by anonymous informants that they had on some occasion displayed wildcard powers. It was a true modern witch hunt, and like their spiritual ancestors at Salem, those hauled before the tail gunner Joe for the non-crime of being an ace had a hard time proving their innocence. How do you prove that you can't fly? None of SCARE's victims ever answered that question satisfactorily, and the blacklist was always waiting for those whose testimony was considered unsatisfactory. The most tragic fates were suffered by those who actually were wildcard victims and admitted their ace powers openly before the committee. Of those cases, none was more poignant than that of Timothy Wiggins, or Mr. Rainbow, as he was billed when performing.
If I'm an ace, I'd hate to see a deuce, Wiggins told McCarthy when summoned in 1953.
And from that moment onward, deuce entered the language as the term for an ace whose wildcard powers are trivial or useless. Such was certainly the case with Wiggins, a plump, nearsighted 48-year-old entertainer whose wildcard power, the ability to change the color of his skin, had propelled him to the dizzy heights of second billing in the smaller Catskill resort hotels, where his act consisted of strumming a ukulele and singing wobbly falsetto versions of songs like Red Red Robin, Yellow Rose of Texas, and Wild Card Blues, accompanying each rendition with appropriate color changes. Ace or deuce, Mr. Rainbow received no mercy from McCarthy or SCARE. Blacklisted and unable to secure bookings, Wiggins hanged himself in his daughter's Bronx apartment less than 14 months after his testimony. Other victims saw their lives blighted and destroyed in only slightly less dramatic ways. They lost jobs and careers to the blacklist, lost friends and spouses, inevitably lost custody of their children in the all-too-frequent divorces. At least 22 aces were uncovered during SCARE's investigatory heyday. McCarthy himself often claimed credit for having exposed twice that many, but included in his totals numerous cases where the accused's powers were established only by hearsay and circumstantial evidence, without a shred of actual documentation, including such dangerous criminals as a Queens housewife who levitated when asleep, a longshoreman who could plunge his hand into a bathtub and bring the water to a boil in just under 7 minutes, an amphibious Philadelphia schoolteacher, she kept her gills concealed beneath her clothing, until the day she unwisely gave herself away by saving a drowning child, and even a pot-bellied Italian greengrocer who displayed an astonishing ability to grow hair at will. Shuffling through so many wild cards, SCARE inevitably turned up some genuine aces among the deuces, including Lawrence Haig, the telepathic stockbroker whose confession triggered a panic on Wall Street, and the so-called Panther Woman of Weehawken, whose metamorphosis before the newsreel cameras horrified theatergoers from coast to coast. Even that paled beside the case of the mystery man apprehended while looting New York's Diamond Center, his pockets bulging with gemstones and amphetamines. This unknown ace displayed reflexes 4 times as fast as those of a normal man, as well as astonishing strength and a seeming immunity to handgun fire. After flinging a police car the length of the block and hospitalizing a dozen policemen, he was finally subdued with tear gas. Scare immediately issued a subpoena, but the unidentified man lapsed into a deep, coma-like sleep before he could take the stand. To McCarthy's disgust, the man could not be roused, until the day, 8 months later, when his specially reinforced maximum security cell was suddenly and mysteriously found empty. A startled trustee swore that he had seen the man walk through the wall, but the description he gave did not match that of the vanished prisoner. McCarthy's most lasting achievement, if it may be termed an achievement, came with the passage of the so-called Wildcard Acts. The Exotic Powers Control Act, enacted in 1954, was the first. It required any person exhibiting wildcard powers to register immediately with the federal government. Failure to register was punishable by prison terms of up to 10 years. This was followed by the Special Conscription Act, granting the Selective Service Bureau the power to induct registered aces into government service for indefinite terms of service. Rumors persist that a number of aces, complying with the new laws, were indeed inducted into variously the Army, the FBI, and the Secret Service during the late 50s. But if true, the agencies employing their services kept the names, powers, and very existence of these operatives a closely held secret. In fact, only 2 men were ever openly drafted under the Special Conscription Act during the entire 22 years that the statute remained on the books. Lawrence Haig, who vanished into government service after the stock manipulation charges against him were dropped, and an even more celebrated ace whose case made headlines all over the nation. David Envoy Harstein, the charismatic negotiator of the 4 aces, was slapped with an induction notice less than a year after his release from prison, where HUAC had confined him for contempt of Congress. Harstein never reported for conscription. Instead, he vanished totally from public life in early 1955, and even the FBI's nationwide manhunt failed to turn up any trace of the man whom McCarthy himself dubbed the most dangerous pink in America. The Wildcard Acts were McCarthy's greatest triumph, but ironically enough, their passage sowed the seed of his undoing. When those widely publicized statutes were finally signed into law, the mood of the nation seemed to change. Over and over again, McCarthy had told the public that the laws were needed to deal with hidden aces undermining the nation. Well, the nation now replied, the laws are passed, the problem is solved, and we've had enough of all this. The next year, McCarthy introduced the Alien Disease Containment Bill, which would have mandated compulsory sterilization for all wildcard victims, jokers, as well as aces. That was too much for even his staunchest supporters. The bill went down to crashing defeat in both House and Senate. In an effort to recoup and recapture the headlines, McCarthy launched an ill-advised scare investigation of the Army, determined to ferret out the aces in the hole that rumor insisted had been secretly recruited years before the Special Conscription Act. But public opinion swung dramatically against him during the Army-McCarthy hearings, which culminated in his censure by the Senate. In early 1955, many had thought McCarthy might be strong enough to wrest the 1956 Republican presidential nomination from Eisenhower, but by the time of the 1956 election, the political climate had changed so markedly that he was hardly a factor. On April 28, 1957, he was admitted to the Naval Medical Center at Bethesda, Maryland, a broken man who talked incessantly about those who he felt had betrayed him. In his last days, he insisted that his fall was all Harstein's fault, that the envoy was out there somewhere, crisscrossing the country, poisoning the people against McCarthy with sinister alien mind control. Joe McCarthy died on May 2nd, and the nation shrugged. Yet his legacy survived him. Scare, the wild card acts, an atmosphere of fear. If Harstein was out there, he did not come forward to gloat. Like many other aces of his time, he remained in hiding.